A trademark is for a name, a phrase, or a logo. But copyright is all about protecting original artistic expression.
You're listening to Thrive by Design, business, marketing, and lifestyle strategies for your jewelry brand to flourish and thrive. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Thrive by Design podcast, episode number 85. Okay, this is Tracy Matthews here, Chief Visionary Officer over at Flourish and Thrive Academy. I am not an attorney, nor do I play one on TV, but I often get asked a lot of legal questions, which I think is interesting. So, of course, over at Flourish and Thrive, we have a really amazing Thrive tribe. We have different communities that we support. And in our Diamond Insiders Club the other day, we had a designer who was asking about trademarks and copyrights. And then a couple of days later in our jewelry business incubator, we had some people talking about trademarks and copyrights again. So I figured that this was a really good opportunity and a prime time to bring on some legal experts who can talk a little bit more legally, maybe I should say, about how to legally protect your business. I always think it's interesting. So Robin and I get requests all the time for us to post examples of contracts or terms or, you know, asking us questions about trademarks and copyright. And while we can give you a general idea of things to do, you know, we're not attorneys and we wouldn't want to be legally liable for giving you wrong information and then you having something go wrong. So this is why I always love to bring guests on the show who are actually experts at what they do and in their field. So today I have two amazing people on the show with me, Lisa Fraley and Genevieve Shingle Jaffe. I've had both of these ladies on the show before. Actually, it wasn't the show. This was back when I was doing video blogs, and I need to remember to link those video blogs, which is super awesome because this was back in the day, like probably 2 or 3 years ago when I first met them that I had them on the show. And since we're always getting questions, I thought I would bring them on. They are the creators of Damsel Goes Bare, which is a really amazing legal course, which I'm sure we'll be talking about later in the interview too. So we'll make sure that we have that linked in the show notes. And I don't want you to miss out on that. But Lisa is awesome. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about my experience with Lisa in Italy on the show. And Jenna, I actually met at a Flourish and Thrive event years and years ago when she was starting her independent attorney business where she was helping becoming an affordable lawyer for entrepreneurs. And she came to one of our events. I just loved her. It was before she was engaged and we were talking about engagement rings and all that sort of stuff. So these two are great. You're going to really love their energy. They know how to communicate all this legal, what I'll call legal mumbo jumbo, because it's kind of a lot of stuff, very clearly and concisely. So I think you're really, really going to enjoy this interview. All right, so I can keep talking about them forever, or we could just dive into the interview. So why don't we do that right now? I am so excited to be here today, as usual. You know, one of the things that we get asked in the Flourish and Thrive community, especially in our membership areas, is what's the difference between trademarks and copyrights? And what do I need to be legally protected for my business? And my answer is usually, I'm not an attorney, nor do I play one on TV. So I'm excited to have Genevieve Shingle Jaffe and Lisa Fraley here, the duo behind Damsel Goes Bare. And Jenna and Lisa have both come to speak to our community before in the past, but I thought it was time for a little refresher. So I'm very excited to have them here today. Jenna and Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I love both of you guys. You know that. Well, I first met Jenna in New York City. She reached out to me because we have a mutual friend in common, Melissa Casera. And Jenna was like, hey, you know, I live in New York and I'm an attorney and I work with small businesses. I would love to meet you. And like that same day, I was like, well, we're having an event with a bunch of designers. Do you want to show up? And she shows up, like not knowing anyone. It was like 6 feet of snow. I feel like that day, it was like a really rough day. It was an awful day to go out. I mean, you really were like, I'm committed to like legal practice and like helping small business. And so, yeah, that was the first time I met you and it was so fun. It was before you even got engaged. I know that you were thinking about getting engaged though at that time because we talked about rings too. but it was so great. And then, you know, I met Lisa virtually and Lisa and I just spent a retreat like a week together in Italy in Rio Maggiore,
learning
more about copywriting. So, so great to like have all these connections. And I love that you guys are partnering together.
I know. We love it too, Tracy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just pleased to have you on the show today because we get so many legal questions. I figured, why not just clear the air and have some real attorneys and legal counsel, legal coaches come in and talk about things that they know a lot more about than I do. I can only talk about my experience, really. So before I dive into the questions, I'd love to just do like a brief formal intro of you, if that's cool.
Sure.
All right. Lisa Fraley, JD, and Genevieve Shingle Jaffe, JD, are the dynamic duo in the online legal course Damsel Goes Bare, where they educate and empower female entrepreneurs with the legal side of their business with sparkle and soul. You can find out more about them at damselgoesbare.com. All right, guys. So let's get started. Tell me a little bit more about your journey and how you kind of went into business together and how Damsel Goes Bare kind of came about.
Yeah. So I usually start since I'm the one that initiated the relationship here. So I guess it's kind of a trend. I like reach out to people. So
you do.
So I started my business in January of 2014 after being a corporate lawyer in New York City. And I wanted a way to work with small businesses, especially female run businesses. And I wanted a way to do so in kind of a group setting. And so I created an online legal course called Damsel in Defense. Now, Lisa at the same time had also created a legal course called Get Legally Covered So You Can Go Bare. And one of my friends was like, oh my goodness, Jenna, you need to check this person out. She's running a course that's like, it looks exactly like yours. And, you know, she had the best of intentions, you know, just, but think, you know, like trying to look out for me thinking that, you know, Lisa was copying me. And I, you know, so I said like, look, you know, I didn't invent courses, but I checked out her sales page and it was really funny that we were using a lot of similar languaging, but like not legal language. Like we were talking about running your business naked and, you know, kind of stuff like that. And so I reached
crazy.
Out.
So weird.
So weird. So I reached out to Lisa just to say like, hey, you know, hi, this is who I am. I had heard of her before because we were both in B school, but we'd never spoken. I said, you know, I have this course and, you know, you have yours and they use similar language. So I just want to make sure that we both understand that we're not copying one another. And, you know, I just wanted to have like a nice amicable conversation around it. There was no accusations. I didn't think Lisa had any ill intention at all. And it struck up this really beautiful friendship. Because Lisa, you can kind of go from your end, but I reached out kind of, you know, I was trying to be nice and Lisa wrote back so kindly. And
well, you guys are the two nicest people I know,
practically. Well, it's so funny though, Tracy, because I had started my business back in June of 2012 as a legal coach, and I combined my background as a health coach and a life coach. And I was also a healthcare attorney in a large firm for a number of years. So I kind of pulled it all together and called myself a legal coach. And I had been working with one-on-one clients for like over two years before Jenna had reached out. And we, like Jenna said, we kind of both knew of each other, but we're just both people who want to have our own voice come through in our work. And we don't really like look at each other's papers. And we just both were kind of doing our own thing. And it's funny because people came up to me too and said, do you know this girl, Jenna? Like she has a legal course. So it's hysterical that we both have great people looking out for us. And people wanted to make sure we knew about the other one. So when Jenna reached out, I thought, you know what? So many typical lawyers would be so unkind. And my whole brand of my business is around legal love and making the law friendly and approachable. And Jenna is the same way. But I thought, you know, she just seems so nice and so cool. So we actually just wrote each other for a little bit. We, like Jenna said, became fast friends. And then I had this dream and I wrote her and I said, Jenna, you won't believe it, but I had a dream last night that we did a legal course together. And she was like, what? Really? Let's do it. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And she goes, I've got the perfect name. She said, let's call it Damsel Goes Bare because it was a combination of her Damsel in Defense course and my Get Legally Covered So You Can Go Bare course. So that's how it was born. And that's how our sort of joint venture was born and our friendship was born as well.
I love it. There, it's like you're kind of calling like, hey, you maybe kind of knocked me off, but I'm not saying that.
No, you know what? Actually, what Jenna wrote was... No, she actually didn't do it that way. She actually wrote Tracy and said, hey, I just want you to know I'm not copying you.
That, I love
that.
That
was really kind. She wasn't saying, you know, I think you're helping me. She just said, hey, I just, no, but some people think that. I mean, some people
for sure.
Lawyers are cutthroat. So we want everyone to know we're not like that. We're not like that.
Well, you know, what's so funny is that I had around that same time, or maybe even before, I think I'd interviewed each of you individually.
Yeah.
For our multiplier profits course.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. And then we had you come in as experts. So that's like, that's even the funnier thing.
Yeah. And we actually talked about that after. We were like, I don't know how you came up at one point, but we were like, oh, we both did calls for Tracy. You know, students. We follow very similar paths. And could we run in kind of like the same circles-ish, but also a little bit different, which is nice.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of overlapping people.
And that's the thing is, like, Jenna has some people who really are drawn to her, and I have some people who are really drawn to me. And then, like you, Tracy, we both have people who are sort of drawn to both of us, and we love that.
Yeah.
We love that people know that we're both available to help them. That makes us happy because we just want people to get freaking legally covered. We just want them to get their legal documents. There's enough for everyone.
And there's so many legal documents to get involved. I mean, I think the same goes true for Robin and me because, Robin is so different than I am. And there's, like, people who are more drawn to Robin, people who are more drawn to me. And, you know, for a lot of people, I'm like, my energy is like too much for them. And for a lot of, and so they like gravitate towards Robin. And for other people, they like to, you know, like to get excited. So, you know, all of it. Just like, I'm just like,
totally get it.
It's always a big joke because, like, I always say, I'm so excited every time I start anything. And it's become like a little bit of a joke in our community. Anyway, now back to the legal stuff, right? So legal protection is a really hot topic. You know, we get questions, like I mentioned, all the time. And I think a lot of designers and a lot of makers aren't really sure, like, exactly what they need in place for their business, whether it be an online or an offline business, to be legally protected. And with that being said, what are some of the things that jewelry designers in particular need in place or need to be thinking about in order to protect themselves so they don't get sued or in trouble or whatever?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we need to always start every training call by saying that, you know, this is just educational, or this is, you know, informational and educational, not specific legal advice, because we don't know everybody's situation. But we just definitely want to provide you with more information so that you can make better decisions. So I'm not going to go, you know, we're not going to start off with trademarks and copyright and all that, because I know that there's a lot of questions that you had regarding that. So that aside, I wanted to start with talking about a website. So anyone who has a website, there are three different legal documents that we always recommend people have. And that would be a website disclaimer, terms and conditions, and privacy policy. And they each cover different protections in different areas of your website. So the disclaimer basically is telling people, you know, I mean, and this might not necessarily always apply to jewelry designers if you're only selling jewelry, because a lot of what Lisa and I teach and who we work with are coaches, but it basically protects your liability from people that come onto your website. So if they read a blog, if they, you know, kind of get a free opt-in, a free download, and they're learning information from you. So this would be very applicable to your business, Tracy, where it's educationally based by saying, like, this, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, this is just, you know, information purposes only. Now, if your website is literally only selling jewelry, you know, what you might want to say is, you know, these are the metals and materials that I use. And in case you have any allergies, you know, this is, you know, look into that. So again, that one's normally a very, very, very important one. But again, if you're only selling jewelry on your website, may not be as applicable. But if you have a blog and you're giving information and education and advice, then that's where it will come into play.
We really encourage our designers to have a blog, actually. Cool. And so that would be important, especially, like, you know, if someone gives, let's say, jewelry cleaning advice and someone's, you know, ring got ruined because they followed the advice, but maybe there's, like, you know, it's not a specific situation. It's just like more of a general.
Exactly. Cause I might put, you know, a piece of platinum into a silver cleaner and maybe it gets all messed up. And cause I was like, oh, I didn't realize.
Exactly.
So, you know, so it's like something silly like that, that the disclaimer would actually help protect against.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay, cool. So that's the disclaimer. Terms
Excellent.
And conditions. Do you want to do terms and conditions?
Yeah, sure. Cool. So the terms and conditions actually is the document that protects the content on the website. So Tracy, you were just talking about the blog that you encourage everyone to have. Mm-hmm. So the articles you were talking about, cleaning your jewelry and so on, that's the document that tells people, here's what you can and can't do with the information on the website. So it's not disclaiming your liability like Jenna was talking about. It's all, well, it has some language of that in it as well. But really, the main purpose is to protect your property, your original content that you are creating for your website, so no one else takes your blog post and runs off and copies it verbatim and puts it on their blog post. We want them to share the blog post, not copy and take the blog post. So that's the terms and conditions. And that's the second document that's really important for your website.
Awesome.
Very cool. And it would also protect, like, if you have the images, like pictures of the jewelry that you're selling, that would be protected as well. So literally anything on your website, it's like, this belongs to me. You can't take it. And if somebody does, then you have a way to come back to them and say like, hey, you breached this document.
Okay, cool.
And then the third document is a privacy policy. And this protects the people who actually come to your website. So if you're collecting any information from them, a name and an email for a newsletter, credit card information because you're selling something, this document says that, hey, we promise that we're not going to sell the information you give us or spam you. So it is important to have that because in many states in the US, it's actually required that you have a privacy policy. Not every single state, however, if you even market to those states. So even if you have, if you sell something to California, if somebody buys something from California, the privacy policy kicks in. California is very, very strict in terms of having this privacy policy. So again, even though it might not be applicable in your state, you're probably not only having visitors on your website from your specific state since it is, the World Wide Web. So we do encourage everybody to make sure that they have that document as well.
I know that when I went and signed up for a credit card processing company to like run credit cards through my website, the first thing they asked for was the privacy policy.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. And what I was going to add right before Jenna was talking about the privacy policy is that the one thing that's important about all three of these documents is that people don't have to do anything to agree to them. By virtue of being on your website, mm-hmm. they're agreeing to them. And the reason why that's important is because with your terms and conditions, and your privacy policy, you're basically telling people, hey, look, we're going to try to keep your information safe that you give to us. But you also need to know that you can't take our content. And the reason why that's important is because we're going to talk about copyright in a minute. But this is more of a contractual. It's like a one-sided contract they don't even have to sign. That's basically mm-hmm. telling them that they are, telling the website visitors that they can't take their stuff. So this protects the jewelry designers by having sort of a contractual provision, which is one area of the law that gives you protection. And then a whole separate area is copyright, which we'll talk about in a bit. So that's why these are both really important things to have.
Okay, awesome.
And also just quickly, they go in the footer of your website. So they should show up on every single page. So that's just where you put them.
Okay, amazing. So like, let's say someone just has an offline business. Is there anything that they need to be thinking about for legal purposes?
Yes. Well, first I would say they need to make sure that they're complying with their state laws around policies around returns and around shipping and around exchanges. And some states require that, and you guys may already know this, Tracy, and you may talk about this. Some states require that you post your refund or return policy where the consumer can see it right at the point of purchase. If they have a bricks and mortar business, other times you have to have it on your website. So the actual transaction of the purchase of the jewelry, there are state laws and requirements for that people need to know about. We can't get super specific because each state varies, but make sure people know to look at their state laws to figure that out. Really important.
Was there a place where they would find that out? Like that they would look specifically, or?
You know what? We always start with, they can talk to an attorney locally where they are, but even just start with Googling to do some research from articles and things to give them an idea where to go. Because a lot of times lawyers will write articles that have links to the laws.
Okay, cool.
Otherwise, the next step is obviously talk to a lawyer locally to get that information.
Okay, awesome. Anything else that they need to be thinking about?
Do you want to talk about corporate entities a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So Tracy, you guys are all probably laughing because Jen and I keep going back and forth, but we both have areas of expertise. And we're always like, you go. But we both can talk about everything. It's just some of us focus on things more than others. It's really kind of cute and funny. But anyway, okay, so corporate entities. So if you're a jewelry designer and you are operating your business and selling your jewelry and you haven't done anything, like filed anything with the state to create a corporate entity, like an LLC or an S-corp, you're called the sole proprietor. Okay. You're a sole proprietor, sole business owner, and you do want to register your business with your city or your county usually, and sometimes your state. If your business name is different from your name, like yours, Tracy Matthews Designs, like if your business is different than your name, you do want to register that at the state level as a doing business as name. Some states call them trade names. Some states call them fictitious names. But in general, you need to tell the state that your business is connected to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first step. Then as you grow, you know, as your business grows, it really makes sense if you have, you know, you jewelry designers have a lot of money basically in assets. You have a lot of assets. You have the materials to make your jewelry, the gems, the gemstones, like you have a lot that you're investing your money in. And you want to make sure then you have an LLC, a limited liability company. And usually that's done, Tracy, when you either have a lot of personal assets already in mm-hmm. your life, like a house and a car and things that are paid off, inheritance, investments, things like that, or you have a lot of money in your business and a lot of assets in your business. So usually we tell people this is a ballpark figure. Talk to your own accountant about your whole financial situation. But a ballpark figure is once your business is about $50,000, that's a good time to start thinking about an LLC if you don't have one yet.
So is that $50,000 in revenue or profit?
Yeah, revenue. Just revenue. Yeah. Because and it's really just to a ballpark figure to help people know, like now your business is really, really
it's growing. It's a real business. It's not
and you
a
have
hobby.
A lot to lose. Yeah, you have a lot more to lose.
Okay, cool.
Yep. And then the last step just to add is that once your business grows even more to about the $100,000 mark, then it's time to think about having an S corporation. S just stands for subchapter S of the Internal Revenue Code. I like to say that S means small, like just think of it as S for a small business. That's the type that you would want to create. And that gives you more flexibility around declaring your income for tax purposes, and it can save you money. It can actually save you a lot of money in certain situations.
Yes.
So you can talk to your accountant about that. I know you have an S corp, Tracy, but
yeah.
Not everyone. You just go one step at a time.
Well, we didn't even have an S corp for Flourish and Thrive until last year. We were well over the $100,000 mark at that point. But
a lot of people are, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I was getting different advice. And then finally, I changed accountants because it's a long story, but changed accountants. And he's like, S-Corp, S-Corp, S-Corp. And he's former IRS. And he's like, I tell all sole business owners to have an S-Corp because to me, that's the best tax benefit for people.
It is. It's just more expensive to maintain with the tax returns you have to do multiple times a year for the business, and you have to do your own tax return and you have to do payroll. So like for a lot of times we don't recommend doing it less than that because it's just more expensive.
Exactly.
The costs and the benefits don't always outweigh each other until you get over that six-figure mark.
Right, right. Awesome. Okay, cool. So anything else that I'm missing or you're missing? Not that you're missing anything, but...
Right.
Those you want to add, maybe, I would honestly.
Those were kind of the big ones, minus the intellectual property stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
We knew we'd get into.
So I want to ask you a quick question. Like, I know insurance isn't really legal stuff, but is that something that you guys advise for or against?
So it depends is usually the answer.
Typical lawyer, right?
Typical lawyer.
You're like, right. This is just information.
Right. If you have a brick and mortar business, then yes, absolutely should have some sort of insurance. And a lot of times you will have to anyway, you know, liability insurance if somebody slips and falls and all of that good stuff. In terms of insurance, if you have an online business, I don't always think it's necessary. If you have like a corporate entity in place and if you have your legal documents in place, you know, it's extra precaution.
Okay.
You know,
cool.
The only thing I'd add to that is sometimes if you go to like display your jewelry at a show or you are hosting an event at a venue, sometimes if you go into a corporation or use corporate space or hotel space or something, they might mm-hmm. require you to have insurance.
They do.
But for the purposes that Jenna's saying, for the your own business, it may or may not be necessary. It's just sometimes you need it when you go other places.
Well, I have insurance for my jewelry company, more for like liability if I'm working with someone's heirloom gemstone and
exactly.
it's like stolen or lost or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's more because it's like high value stuff. I don't want to have to pay that out of pocket.
Yeah, which is very smart.
Yeah. And when I rented an office space, I was required by the, like you're saying, like by the corporation that owned the building to get insurance for liability.
Exactly.
Insurance. Cool. So now let's talk about the juicy stuff, trademark and copyrights. So there's so much confusion between the two. So why don't we clear that up first and tell us a little bit more how to get them and how they're enforceable and just in general, shed some light on the topic.
Great. I'm going to give you the basic definition of each of them.
Okay, cool.
So that we can, so I'll start with that. So a trademark is for a name, a phrase, or a logo. So like a business name, or maybe your tagline or the logo for your business. And it's about preventing brand confusion. So that's kind of like the basic trademark. Copyright is all about protecting original artistic expression. So we have sculptures, we have books, we have music, we have lyrics. That's kind of like, again, like the very basic of copyright. So you'd copyright a blog, you can copyright a picture, you can copyright a song, kind of stuff like that. So that's really like
jewelry. And a piece of jewelry, yeah. And an image of a piece of jewelry.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely going to get into that. For trademarks, if jewelry designers wanted to get a trademark, it would be to protect a name. So their business name, their collection name.
Okay.
Their logo for their business. You wouldn't be trademarking a design, like a jewelry design.
Okay, so like, I'm sure that this is a trademark, and I'm going to use a cheesy example, but like, every kiss begins with K is probably trademarked.
Yes. Probably, and it can be, because it's a phrase.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Tiffany's is, and ironically, Tiffany Blue, the color, is also a trademark, because it's brand identity.
Okay, so anything that's brand identity that identifies your brand. Okay, cool.
But pertaining to only those things Jenna mentioned, though, trademarks only cover words, phrases, and logos. So okay. Not like the packaging, like that's a whole nother area.
Right.
Okay, cool. So would that fall under, well, we'll talk about it in a minute. So yes. Would that fall under like copyrights then?
No.
Something else. You're like, no.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple other things that,
yeah.
That we'll mention briefly, but that we don't want to get into because it's very complicated.
Okay. Then we'll wait till the end until you mention that. Okay. I'm going to ask you the broad, is there anything else we should be thinking about?
Yeah. Got it. Perfect.
So in the jewelry design space, like this happens all the time. Comments like, oh, I saw X and X supplier have the same design that I did. And, you know, what should I do? I want to sue them. Or, you know, this other designer is totally knocking me off and she has no original ideas and everything that she designs is exactly the same as mine. But the truth of the matter is a lot of people source on similar inspiration and there are trends in the market. And so occasionally, sometimes things come out looking the same. And,
exactly.
You know, when is a copyright actually enforceable and like how close does it have to be and how does that whole thing work? I have some stories of designers who have like literally pursued someone for copyright infringement. And in fact, a designer I'd never heard of in the past, like years and years ago, probably 10 years ago, sent me a cease and desist letter for something that I was selling in the Sundance catalog. And I was like, what? Like, I don't even know who you are. So I mean, it happens. So I'm just curious.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that funny? That's just like what happened with Jenna and me that we shared at the beginning. Right. She called me and was like, hi, I just want you to know I'm not using your words. We literally came up with them both ourselves because we're very similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I love, Tracy, that, you know, we always tell people first presume innocence, like really presume innocence because you don't know if someone copied you or not, and you don't want to just go start accusing people of that. So here's the thing about copyright. In order to go after someone for money, for damages, for injunctive relief, to get them to stop doing the copying, if you think they really are copying, you have to have filed a copyright application and gotten copyright from the government. So there's an actual process that people file their copyright, they get the copyright from the government, and it's granted to make sure that there isn't anything else out there that obviously isn't very similar, which is why you're getting the copyright in the first place. But when it comes to creative elements like jewelry, you have to make sure it's original and you have to make sure that whatever the thing is fixed, right? So the design is fixed. It's not a malleable piece of part of the jewelry in any way. It has to be fixed. Copyright violations are also kind of like trademarks around originality. It's really around the originality, like Jenna was talking about before. So you have to prove that yours was original and you have to prove when you started using yours and how you created yours. And it's just not as easy as it sounds to prove copyright infringement cases.
Now, I've heard people saying this, and you know,
I think that there's a common misunderstanding. I mean, obviously photography is like copywritten, right? Or copyrighted, however you say that. Yep. I always want to say written because of copywriters.
Exactly. I'm with you, sister.
Like when I'm writing, I'm always like my mind between the two, like, which one am I talking about? No, I was kidding. But, you know, like, I've heard some misinformation and I don't know if this is true or not, that as soon as like you take a picture of your piece and put it out into the world, that's a copyright. Is it just that the photo is your copyright or is it something else?
Yeah. And do you want, so in terms of like photography, are you talking about like in terms of photography?
Well, I mean, photography or the image that's in the photograph.
Okay. So yeah. So when you take a picture, whoever takes the picture owns that picture. So you own that, like it's you automatically own that picture. Now, what Lisa had said before is that doesn't give you any like legit legal protection in terms of going after somebody for taking that picture. You actually have to obtain the copyright registration.
Okay.
If you take a picture of something, it doesn't mean you own that something, because I can take a picture of anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're not, the image, the whatever you're taking the picture of is not protected. The picture, exactly how the picture looks when you take it, that's what's considered a copyright.
Okay. So each piece of jewelry, like if someone's designing a jewelry collection, if they want to get copyright protection, they have to register every single piece in their collection in order to be protected.
Yeah. So Tracy, you can do it in different ways. You can copyright pieces or you can copyright it as a collection.
Okay.
So often, if obviously people are usually selling each jewelry piece individually, but if they're doing a set of something and they want things to be sold as a set, then you would copyright it as a set. But normally it has to be each piece because each one stands alone.
Okay. Got it. Got it. Great. Awesome.
And just to add to what Jenna was saying before too, when you were talking about when someone takes a picture of their jewelry and tries to use that as evidence of like, see, I copyrighted this. This is my copyright because I took a picture of it, right? It's actually, the picture is not proof. It's not proof enough. Like Jenna said, you can take a picture of anything. But a lot of people, you get a copyright ownership. You can use copyright to say that you own it as of that date, but you don't have any rights to enforce it unless you filed the documents with the government.
Okay.
So yes, you own the copyright. You have copyright to that original work, but you can't do anything with that. You can't go after someone unless you filed it with the government.
Okay. Got it. And our copy, I'm just curious, if you wanted to copyright a piece of jewelry or a collection of jewelry, is that hard to do? Do you have to prove that it's like completely original design or something that you haven't, that has never been produced before? Or how does that work?
Yeah. So you submit the application to the United States Copyright Office.
Okay.
And they would check. They have their legal department, basically their copyright officers who go and check to make sure there isn't something that is already exists that's substantially the same and that could not allow that copyright to be allowed. But in general, yeah, you just submit it with proof of what it looks like to the copyright office.
Yeah, like the proof isn't on you to show that it's new and original. Obviously, you want to try to do some research on your own just to make sure that it is original, but it would be the copyright office that would do kind of like the thorough search to make sure that it is original and not substantially similar to anything else that's out there.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I've heard of some designers actually going after other people who probably did sort of get inspired from their work. But even when they went through the court process, they ended up eventually losing like a lot of money in court fees and attorney fees because they didn't win the case. And it's like a really hard thing to kind of prove.
You should still do it though. Like, you don't let it stop people from actually copywriting it. The only other thing we want to say about that, or at least one of the other things, is that when you copyright something, you can't change it after that. So the protection of the copyright only extends to what that piece looks like. So you would get protection for that piece, but let's say you took a setting and put in a different stone, that wouldn't be copyrighted because something had been changed.
Okay.
You'd have to file a copyright for that new gemstone, for example.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Lisa and I were talking about this yesterday. Actually, it's funny that, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're going to make changes, so like maybe you have the same exact, you know, and I don't know all the terminology, but you have the same like kind of like
we're like jewelry illiterate over here.
We are.
So you have the same design, and then you just have like the base where, you know, you have the prongs where you're going to put, so we would suggest that if you're going to have a collection, maybe that has the exact same kind of, you know, circular
setting
There you go. the same setting, but you can copyright that without having to put in each of the stones. And whatever stone you put in, it would still be protected because that setting
Brilliant.
Yeah. The setting would be protected. But yeah.
Okay, cool. That's a good way to do it then, because then you can like, you have a lot more range.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's because the setting is fixed. It's not changeable.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Thanks for clearing that up, Lee.
It's confusing. I mean, it definitely is confusing. And so if you know, this is why we always recommend when it comes to trademarks and copyrights, you know, people can certainly do them on their own, but we really, really recommend talking with an attorney or getting legal help to do it, because it's more complicated than it appears. It seems kind of simple in a lot of ways, but it's really complex.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
even for lawyers.
I know, right? So let's talk a little bit about trademarks. When is a good time for a designer to invest in trademarking their name, their logo, and all that stuff? I know in my first business, I didn't trademark Tracy Matthews Designs until like maybe 8 years down the road or 7 years down the road. And it wasn't until I met my friend who was a trademark attorney at the time, who was like, oh, is your business name trademarked? And I was like, oh, you have to do that?
Exactly.
It was many years ago, but I was kind of like naive about that. So I finally did. But
yay.
Tell me a little bit about that. Your thoughts on that. Because I know it's an investment, right?
Yeah, it's definitely an investment. So, you know, it's more than, you know, a website document would be, because it's a process. To obtain a registered trademark, it can take a year.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of different steps that you have to go through. It's not just fill out the application and, you know, we're good to go. No, like there's a couple different steps. And so, you know, because of that, because of the expense and because of the time, you know, we usually say if you're making money with the name, if you're like really passionate about it, that you would be devastated if somebody else took it and started using it. And you plan on continuing to use this name or phrase or logo again for an extended period of time, then that might be a good time to consider, you know, moving forward with a trademark, because you're going to continue to make money with it. And you want to make sure that people know who you are. And when they see this name, that they recognize that it's part of you.
Awesome. Awesome.
Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, Lisa.
No, that's great. That's great. That's exactly right.
So I know that there were a couple of dangling chads, you know, left over.
love the dangling chads. Oh
my God. There were a couple of other things that you wanted to kind of like slide in here for things that people should be thinking about legally. What are those things?
Okay. So the first one is people often have a lot of questions around the actual packaging around the jewelry. So the box or the bag or whatever it is that you're displaying your jewelry in and providing it to your purchaser in. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, can't you trademark that? Or can't you copyright that? Like, how can we protect that? Right. So the first thing we want to mention is that you can't really copy ideas. This is really tricky, but this makes sense why they're like knockoff brands of jeans and like 47 million brands, because you can't copyright or trademark an idea. There is something that some people will ask us about related to the packaging, and they'll say, well, I've heard of something called trade dress. Can't we do like trade dress? And it's cute, because I always think of like the trademark wearing a dress, but that's not really what it means. But it's kind of a cute concept, right?
Yeah, totally.
So here's the thing. Trade dress is, in some cases, for some brands, for some situations, you could do trade dress, but usually it has to do with the recognition of the packaging as the actual brand. First of all, the brand association, and it has to be distinguishable from anything else out there. It can't be substantially similar to anything else out there. So it's hard to prove that, which means there has to be brand recognition, big brand recognition, not just like your beloved tribe of consumers who love you, but big, like the Tiffany box, right?
Exactly.
That they could file for trade dress. But most smaller business owners, unless you have like huge Tiffany and Oprah-like recognition, I'm being a little bit exaggerative, but you get the point, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's hard to use a trade dress argument.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, most people who are designing packaging, it's not always necessarily, I mean, actually at one point I was designing custom packaging that was like a specific design for my brand, but a lot of people aren't investing in that, like in the earlier stages. They're just kind of plopping their logo onto a
yeah, exactly,
a box or a pouch. A
beautiful box. Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Wow, this is so, like, I actually learned a lot of new stuff. Like, I thought I knew what we were going to talk about. And I mean, the whole copyright thing, like,
surprise.
That's like new to me. I'd had totally different information. And that's why I can tell you what I know, but I am not an attorney and nor do I play one on TV. So I'm glad you guys showed up today to kind of clear up this confusion. So I'd love to hear from you guys. Where can we find you? Do you have any last words? And I know you have a legal course, so I can sort of drop the link for that. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Lisa and I, as we mentioned, joined forces to bring a legal information course to everybody where you do actually get the template. You get the legal templates and you have to kind of customize them yourself, but we have video lessons that walk you through how to create them and how to customize them. And our course is called Damsel Goes Bare. We have two different tiers. The one is the full course, which is a live course that is running right now. So it won't be available for a little while because I'm having a baby. so going to have to wait. But we have an evergreen version, which is the light version that comes with the documents, the lessons, but it doesn't come with any access to us. So because of that, it's a lot cheaper.
Awesome.
Well,
I know a lot of designers really want to learn a lot more about the legal stuff and also, you know, have access to these templates. So if you want to go over to flourishthriveacademy.com/damsel, you can check out the Damsel Goes Bare course and see if it's right for you. I think it's a really insanely reasonable investment. It's for what you get, it's like not expensive at all. So highly recommended that you go pop over there. And I've also, you know, worked with Jenna and worked with Lisa in different ways. And these girls know what they're talking about. So highly recommend them.
Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah.
That's so nice of you. I know. And we love the fact that you are, you know, teaching your tribe about how to protect themselves because you guys they're working so hard to build your business.
I know.
And the last thing we want is for anyone to come and take it or copy it or steal it and you know, even when you come from this beautiful heart-centered place as a business owner, all you want to do is just give beautiful jewelry to the world, right? It makes people happy and mark milestones in their lives. You know, you're allowed and you do want to protect your work as well. So
exactly.
Definitely be an and.
Exactly. And I know, like, you know, when you are legally covered, you can relax and not be so paranoid about people.
Totally.
Like, you know, exactly. Stealing your stuff, which is cool.
Totally. Exactly.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for being on the show today. Mm-hmm. This was awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks
this
for
was
us.
Awesome. We're grateful.
All right,
thank
you guys.
Thank you, Tracy. Okay.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening today. It's Tracy here signing off. But before I do, I want to make sure that you check out the Damsel Goes Bare course and you can head on over to flourishthriveacademy.com/legal. That's flourishthriveacademy.com/legal. I'm also going to have it linked up in the show notes, so no worries there. All right, you guys, thanks so much for listening today. As always, it's my pleasure to be here. Have a good day and take care till next time.